What is... Dax, are you...
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge! Trucks up 3.9%!
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
But dude averages 18 yards after catch.
We get it. When you're passionate about something, you go all in. You live entirely in that world. That's exactly how Graybar is about renewable energy projects.
He's all fourth quarter, such a
Join our league of clean energy at Graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Whether you want to
buy, buy, buy.
In a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market, Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
I think we might be on an island on this Durant thing. The text page is coming back fierce and heavy. Durant, too fragile to be trading for at his age. Durant never pushed a team over the top, ever. Well, I would submit that, the Warriors did lose the year before Durant got there, and then they won. I would say, technically, he did put them back over the top again, you know. But
you know what, though? It is. I think that's the tough thing, is that you have to remember that it's not like Durant is the guy that made them, you know, capable of winning a championship. But to have the run that they did, it's not as simple as saying, like, oh, they easily could have done that without Durant.
Totally.
So,
yep.
Yeah.
Totally.
Durant pushed them into Dynastyville.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. That's a good way to put it. Do not do this trade. Only give the two Suns picks for Devin Booker. Durant will get hurt. See, you've got, like, Jalen Green is your budding Devin Booker in this whole thing. Like, I think, you know, because there are people on here saying, would that stunt Jalen Green's growth? I don't think it would. I really don't. Like, he might not average 25 a game. Like, he might be, you know,
right,
like the scoring may be more balanced, but I think he can be just as good a player, you know?
No, in a lot of respects, that turns, you know, is kind of like, okay, yeah, how do you define growth? Okay, it doesn't, maybe it keeps him from being an MVP candidate or something like that, but in terms of actual growth and learning how to, you know, share the ball and be part of a total offense and all of that, that maybe it might end up ultimately being really good for him. Yeah. I don't know.
I got a couple.
As far as the injuries go, I mean, he played 75 games last year.
Yeah.
He missed almost the entire season. He played 47 games the year before in 22-23.
Okay.
55 the year before that. It's been way more injured than that, and now he's 36 years old. It's a much, much bigger factor than it would be for a lot of other players.
Yeah.
It's given up a lot for a guy that is, I don't think it's a gamble on whether or not he makes your team better, but it almost feels like a 50-50 gamble as to whether he'll be available in the playoffs.
If you do this move, you feel you can win the championship this year. Like, that's the thing. Like, if they make
I don't him, like the big if being that he's 36 years old and he might not be healthy the entire time.
Yeah, that's so you wouldn't do it. It sounds like you're veering more towards doing the deal.
I've got two boxes checked in the reservation side of thing, which is just simply chemistry. Mm-hmm. Dylan Brooks is a veteran leader who's he's a Draymond Green type of guy.
Yes.
Like, when you want a scrappy, when you want a guy who's going to kind of enforce the scrappiness element or the blue collar element, Dylan Brooks is that guy. I'm not comparing him to the player Draymond Green, but just what he provides in that regard. And then you've got the injury concerns of Kevin Durant. And I know, look, they're first round picks, and this team already has a bunch of young guys, but they're Phoenix's first-round picks.
Yeah.
These aren't Rockets' first-round picks.
That's a lottery.
These are valuable first-round picks.
The 25 pick is a lottery pick right now.
I'm passing so far.
You're backing away. That's fine. Yeah.
Like, if it was a younger Kevin Durant, then I'd feel differently about it.
I'll admit, like, there's probably like 40 to 50% of my wanting to do it that has to do with being on the radio. You know, like, right? I mean, it would be a major landscape, playoff landscape rattling trade right there.
You know what though, Sean? I mean, you got to also just look at how we feel as Houston sports fans about, all right, you know what? Stephon Diggs, it wasn't yielding the results that we would hope for, but they were a better offense, even though they weren't a great offense. They've been way worse since Stephon Diggs went down.
Yeah.
And Stephon Diggs is an older wide receiver.
Yeah.
And you signed him for a one-year deal, yeah, what turned into a one-year deal, and yeah, you gave up a second-round pick.
Yep.
Which made sense at the time, but in hindsight, yeah, if I knew he was going to get injured, as older players tend to do,
mm-hmm,
it really wasn't worth it. And Durant's much older than Stephon Diggs. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm passing.
The last one I'll read, then we'll get to J.J. Watt on the McAfee show, because this is a cross-sport comparison. I think it's a good one. The Jets were a well-coached and young and up-and-coming developing team, developing their young players. And then what do? They went out and they got Aaron Rodgers. You would be repeating that scenario if you bring Durant to the Rockets. That's a really, really interesting analogy across sport right there. Because Durant's got a little bit of Rodgers in him, you know, like,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
The rabbit ears and the social media, yeah.
Yeah, and he's basically on a de facto one-year deal no matter where he is, because he'll force his way out if he doesn't like things. I guess the difference would be is that Durant will improve the offense.
Yes.
Immediately.
Yes.
Rodgers, it wasn't clear, because football's a lot more complicated, but he is also, he's coming off a good stretch of play in Green Bay, but he's old too. And it's just football's different. It wasn't immediately clear that, oh yeah, Rodgers is definitely going to improve the offense.
Yeah.
With Durant, I feel like, no, day one, he'll improve the offense. But it's definitely a fair comparison.
Oh yeah.
Very, very. It's a very good comparison.
I like it a lot. Yeah. Up to and including, they both have had Achilles issues. Like,
yeah. Except that Durant's, you know, made it through his.
Yeah.
And,
oh yeah.
Come out the other side.
Of course. Of course.
He's not. He wasn't 40 years old when he was trying to come back from
Achilles.
He's not
washed. Aaron Rodgers might be washed. Kevin Durant's not washed. J.J. Watt. If he were to keep playing, I don't think he'd be washed, but he's chosen to go into media, and he's doing very, very well for himself. He was on the Pat McAfee show for his weekly visit yesterday. Here's J.J. Watt breaking down this version, the 2024 version of the Houston Texans defense.
I mean, obviously, the Texans defense was just incredible to watch. Pat, I hope you and the rest of the AFC South got a real good chance to tune into that.
Yeah, thanks for representing for us. Mm-hmm. Thanks for representing for AFC South.
Yeah, just holding it down out here for the AFC South. For me, it was awesome. I think everybody watching hated it because it was pure defense. But for me, seeing Danielle Hunter, Will Anderson Jr., Khalil Mack, Joey Bosa, seeing these guys tee off was great. Also slightly worrisome because didn't know if any points were going to be scored whatsoever in this game, and it wasn't looking good. Then clearly the turning point of the game was the fumbled snap. CJ turns it into a long pass, and then he scrambles on the next one, takes us down, and that turned out to be the momentum changer. Clearly almost like a light went on in his head, like, oh yeah, I am one of the best players in the world. I'm going to go over here and take over. But this Texans defense, I think we give a ton of credit to the edge rushers, and rightfully so. I think there's so many other guys that also contribute to the two corners are lockdowns. I mean, you got Lasser and Stingley who are absolute lockdowns. You got the backers who are playing good. You have the guys inside, Danico Autry, Mario Edwards, some of these guys. Like, this defense is a legitimate Super Bowl caliber defense. It's a matter of if we can put it all together and keep it all together. And obviously, we all understand the monumental task at hand going into Kansas City up against Patrick Mahomes and the three-time champ. So, but this defense is the real deal.
Yeah, and look, I think that's the sum total of it all is that it remains, even after the promising performance by the offense last week, it remains a team that you look at it, and if you're being as objective as possible, the most realistic avenue that they make a push and beat the Chiefs and then beat whoever comes next is if the defense just flat out goes off.
Balls.
And hey, that was promising by the offense. They still didn't score a whole bunch of points last week.
No.
It wasn't the greatest show on turf.
No.
You've got to have a freakishly good run by the defense. And that's hard to predict, especially when you're going up against a quarterback like Pat Mahomes, who has never thrown an interception in the divisional round, hasn't thrown an interception this year since mid-November. But, hey, Justin Herbert had been equally careful with the football.
Yeah.
Pat Mahomes slightly better quarterback than Justin Herbert.
Yeah.
But still, like, you got it. But it illustrates it's got to be an out of your brain type of defensive performance for them to really pull off some kind of a run.
Yeah, I think that's it'll be based on the defense if they make a run. If they win on Saturday, the defense, I think it's clear, then that means the defense will have played its A game. And the, you know the old saying, like, defense travels, and I feel like that's right to a degree. Like, the play-to-play, the tackling, the, you know, just the lack of mental error. Like, I think those are all things that travel. I think there is, especially on the road, I think there is a little more randomness built into the turnover part of it. Like, it's harder to generate. I think it's easier is probably the wrong word. Playing defense is really hard, but I think it's easier to, like, hold them to 3 yards a carry, you know, lock down this receiver. It's much harder to go in there and say, we got to be +3 in turnovers. Like, okay, good luck.
Right, right. You know? Yeah.
Because that means you got to protect the football also in that case. You know?
Right, that's another thing. It's like, hey, CJ still didn't. Great job, offense, and getting it together and everything. But CJ was careless with the ball. You know, you just got to hem out or iron out some of that. At the very beginning, they got a little bit of that, like, AFC. Smack talk that they love to do on that show.
Oh, the AFC South. Yeah.
AFC South smack talk. I think that you and I have kind of felt like, it always feels kind of cringy when they're arguing about, you know, who's the best in the AFC South, because it hasn't historically been a great division.
No.
It occurs to me, I think we need to lean into this to the point where, start having the AFC South certain pride. Where, yes, in the division, and to the point where, and this is the only way it works, I'm going to do something that I don't like to do, and definitely never while I'm being recorded. I'm going to advocate collusion by the AFC South team.
Okay, all right.
I think this is what they need to do. You start to get down towards the end of the season, and you know who the haves and have-nots are.
Right.
And maybe it's clear, like, that one team's better than the other three. Those other teams got to start tanking to whoever the AFC South champion is.
Oh.
Help get them a better seed in the playoffs.
Oh, okay. So that the division can go make a run.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And then when you're in the playoffs, you need to bring in whichever AFC South teams aren't in the playoffs.
Yeah.
They need to help out, like, actively actually just assist the teams that are in the AFC
South. Do we have to fly in fans, like, from Indy and Nashville and Jacksonville? Like,
If they agree to wear Texans gear and get some dental work so they just don't look like your average Tennessean.
Okay.
All right, you gotta be able to pass yourself off as a civilized human being. But, yes, if you pass the aesthetic standard, and if you wear the Texans gear, then yes, you can be there.
Okay, I like this. That is outside the box thinking right there, or outside the rhombus thinking,
which,
as we were discussing
by Jack
earlier.
Used to be standards. As long as it's outside the box,
it's
then
good.
Damn, it's good.
It's
good,
yeah. Hey, one more from J.J. Watt on the Pat McAfee Show. Here's J.J. Watt weighing in on the Dallas situation, where there is currently a head coaching vacancy.
Cowboys, I have zero idea what in the world that is. Blocking interviews from McCarthy last week and then letting him go this week, getting yourselves where you can't interview Ben Johnson and those guys, like, just zero idea what's happening down there.
They said it's a solo mission by Jerry. That's the latest report. I think Gene Slater said Jerry Jones is taking his own himself.
Great.
Listen, if it's a good hire, it's on me. If it's a bad hire, it's on me. You guys don't have to deal with what I'm doing. And I'm very proud of what we did in oil and gas. And, most proud about getting to do this with my sons. And you don't want to be sitting there, I'm sorry, laying there in the future wishing you could see a couple more sons come up.
So that's him doing an impression of Jerry Jones on the show Landman.
Yeah.
Which was pretty good by Pat McAfee.
Yes.
It was a good little bit of acting. McAfee will probably start getting some acting roles. Yeah.
Oh,
little
yeah.
Cameos here and there. He should. He's got the charisma for it.
No doubt.
The fact that this is the thing. Jerry Jones did an interview a year ago or so where basically he was – somebody had asked him, like, why is he the best guy? Mm-hmm. And he starts going over his resume. And you're like, yeah, Jerry, that stuff was – everything he was listing was either on the business side of things or it was the success from long
in the 90s.
The past. Yeah. The thought I had was that if Jerry Jones were doing that interview from his car, It's like he must have some special car where the rear view mirror takes up the entire space of the windshield. Like, you're just, because that's what it feels like. He's driving this car where the rear view mirror is the size of the windshield. He can't see anything that's in front of him. And he's bragging about all this football stuff. And you're like, Jerry, that was 30 years ago.
Yeah.
30 years ago. Like, what? Your qualifications and standards. Do you know how many good GMs there are from 1989 that I would not give a chance in hell to come in and be my GM today?
Yeah.
But you got to do something in the last 30 years. It's incredible. And this, like, letting, just blocking McCarthy's interviews, well, just simply not, like, not having any plan of keeping him or anything else like that. It's classic Jerry Jones just living at a pace that's different than everybody else's.
Yeah.
And it is way too slow for the NFL. It's just a, it's a BS bogus Bush League move to just block a guy from interviews when you've got no intention of keeping him.
And yet, at this stage that Jerry's at, like, I don't even know that he, like, knew it was Bush League or was doing it out of pettiness. It, like, it feels like there's no plan with anything that team does. Like, if
it's a damn shame.
It feels like someone got in his ear and said, hey, you know, Mike wants to interview for this Chicago job. You still have him under control for a week. Oh, really? I can block this? Oh, okay. Well, let's block it. Why are you doing this? I don't know. Because we can, I guess. I don't know. That's the most helpless feeling, I think, as a fan, is when ownership is messing up. Because that's the one thing that, barring selling the team or the owner being forced out like Daniel Snyder was, I mean, think about what those Washington people were living with for 25 years up there. Like, you're a diehard fan of the team.
Yeah.
And the one person or the one entity that is really screwing up is the one that won't fire themselves.
It's kind of sad because, man, you'd like to think that, okay, when you get to a certain age, you become a mentor as much as anything else, and you've trained people around you or in your organization to be able to carry on your legacy.
Yeah.
And he is just clutching with a death grip this notion that he's the guy. He's the only guy that knows what he's doing.
It's wild.
And when, like, the clear and obvious thing is that so many times he is undoing the good work or good decisions of people in his organization, that it's kind of sad.
Yeah.
He's destroying his own legacy because he has done a lot of really impressive things in the NFL. If it is indeed just a one man search for him, I'll remind him the last time that he had a coaching search, he allowed Mike McCarthy to sit there and lie to him about having watched all the previous games of the Cowboys.
Yep.
McCarthy admits it in a press conference sitting next to Jerry Jones that he lied to the guy who just hired him. And it's like, it's obvious that you're just you are past your prime, man.
Yep. No question. All right. Payne and Pendergast with you. Up next, the biggest non X's and O's potential obstacle for the Chiefs and for the Texans, which one weighs bigger into this game? We will discuss coming up next.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how.
Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
And we gotta grade these nicknames in the next segment for the defensive line for the Texans. Jonathan Alexander had a good piece on Rod Wright, the D-line coach in that room, and kind of the ethos of that room. And I guess the nicknames are a big deal. We talked about it a little bit yesterday, but I looked at the article. I wrote down all the nicknames. We'll have to grade these in the
next
segment.
I got nervous at first because it sounded a little too much like the cosplay of the linebackers a few years back. But it's more just organic and good.
Well, and it also sounded a little like the defensive line on that team called themselves the Lunch Pail Crew. And remember that? And it's like, okay, well, like, other than DJ Reader, none of you guys are really good at football. Like, you can't be really nicknaming your group anything if you're not a great group.
I didn't mind the Lunch Pail Crew because I think a lot of it was also kind of a joke about how, like, all right, JJ's the guy that's going to get the glitz and attention and everything else. Like, we're the Lunch Pail Crew.
Definitely the least offensive of the three position groups that decided to nickname themselves or engage in cosplay. As you said, the linebackers were the cosplay group. That was the worst. And yet the Rock Boys, that was pretty bad. The Rock Boys.
The Rock Boys, I did not like
annoying.
That either.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I know Whitney Merciless still lives here, and he was the inventor of the Rock Boys, and I love Whitney Merciless. That was a horrible invention. The Rock Boys
sucked. I didn't like
it
because it almost felt like a slap in the face to anybody who grew up listening to hard rock and metal and just felt like, no, you guys are not metal. You know, like, it's just not even the good. You're good, but you're not metal.
Yeah.
All right? Like, it's just, there's a difference.
Yeah. And then Deshaun joined the group as like a, you know, like almost like a, like feature. It was like the Rock Boys, but they were doing a collab with the quarterback room and with featuring Deshaun Watson, FT period Deshaun Watson. He starts guitaring and whatnot.
Yeah, plus the signature move was like the Pete Townsend windmill, and then you get into a whole other reasons I don't want you to be the Rock Boys. Yeah.
Right. That was really ultimately the downfall of Deshaun Watson, was joining the Rock Boys.
That's where, it makes sense.
Might be the genesis of it, man. You never know. All right, so we'll get into that in the next segment. Okay, so Seth, to me, the biggest non-X and O storylines with this game, or things that could negatively impact either team, I think for the Chiefs, it's the layoff. You know, what is 24 days off? How does that affect them? There's evidence in the past with the Chiefs that resting has resulted in rust, and it's taken them a while to get going. Now, to be clear, this group of Chiefs, to be clear, this head coach, this quarterback, this tight end, they've never lost in this round. So while it slowed them down a little bit at the beginning of games, perhaps, ultimately they've managed to go ahead and win games. I think that's it for the Chiefs. I think for the Texans, it's the weather. The 31 degrees is, I'm just looking right now, the high of 31 that day. Thank God they play this game on Saturday and not Sunday. Like, Sunday, it does dip into those temperatures that you were talking about before.
Yeah. Like, where you say your fingers start to get a little numb once it goes below 20.
Yeah.
Anywhere between 20 and 32, I feel like you're physiologically, you feel the same.
Yeah. Yep. So it's supposed to be, I think, 31 is what I saw. Here was CJ when he was asked yesterday. On Tuesday, about the weather situation.
That's kind of one of the reasons I went to Ohio State, was to play in the cold and to get used to that. So, you know, I played in cold weather games before. It's different, but it's better than playing when it's wet. So, and then it snows, which is better than, you know, if it rains. So, I'm kind of used to them, but at the same time, we really don't play in the cold here, but definitely have been trained by it in college.
Yeah, 33 and partly cloudy on Saturday.
And the only one, the thing I was a little disappointed in was whoever asked the question, had prefaced it by saying, hey, in New England, you'd hear these stories about Bill Belichick dipping the ball in cold, icy water before the quarterbacks handled him and everything to get ready for it. So he asked, do you guys do anything like that? And apparently no. So I don't know. I just maybe I like can I get a little bit of an ice bucket plunge, or maybe they are doing it and he just didn't want to talk about it.
You would like for them to do that. You would like for them to plunge the balls into a practice into water.
Well, CJ made the point though too that it's probably, if there is precipitation, it's going to be snow, not rain, and rain messes you up a lot more than snow does.
Yeah.
But then now. Winter, it's still potentially, if it warms up and it rains or snows, you could get that wintry mix, and that's the worst. When you're getting sleet and snow and rain all at once and at different points in the game, that's when it seems to create just a comedy of errors. But which could work in the Texans' benefit, since the Texans take the ball away so well, maybe that ends up being, maybe you want a sloppier football game. Sloppy conditions are kind of an equalizer.
Yeah, for sure. And I think the Texans may have the better defense in this game. You know, that tends to favor the better defense in this game. So CJ, I'm looking at it. 33, partly cloudy. They're practicing outside today. We just got that text. So they are practicing outside. It's 47 degrees right now. That ain't 33, but it also isn't normal Houston weather. So they're getting a little taste of some chilliness, at least.
You did the research onto how he did in November games in college. Right?
Yeah, and here's what I learned is that CJ probably could have played in a nuclear war in the middle of it and thrown for 400 yards against some of these teams.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it's... But you got to handle
the
football.
Did you go and find out the specific weather conditions?
I tried to. You know, collegereference.com, which is like the sister site to profootballreference.com, doesn't have nearly the game day information that the pro football one. Like, the pro football one gives you the spread on the game that day, the game time, kickoff temperature. So I just went with November and made sure that it was all cold weather cities.
Yeah.
And the fact of the matter is, CJ played two full seasons in college. In 2021... he played four November games in places that I promise you were not warm in November. He completed 80% of his passes for, this is 2021, four games, completed 80% of his passes for nearly 1,800 yards, 19 touchdowns, and one interception. So I don't think he was playing murderer's row, but one of those games was actually a Michigan game, similar to 2022. Now, 2022, the numbers were way down. Four games... didn't even complete 58% of his passes. Didn't even get to 1,000 yards. Eight touchdowns, two interceptions. That's acceptable. That included the one game, like whenever CJ in cold weather gets brought up and it's people trying to debunk his ability to play in cold weather, they bring up the Northwestern game in 2022, which was major winds. Like,
that was wind more than anything
else. He only threw for 76 yards in that game. So that,
and that's the thing. Rain, I think rain is worse than snow, depending on what field conditions are like and everything and all that. But but wind is worse than anything. Wind screws everything up. Stroud has played in four NFL games with the temperature below 45 degrees.
Okay.
He's 2-2 in those games. He dropped the coldest game, which was the Ravens
playoff
last
game.
Year. That was 27 degrees.
Yep.
So I don't.
And they scored no touchdowns on offense in that game.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was a punt return.
So in a very small sample size, I think the cold weather affected the offensive guards more so than CJ in that game. CJ didn't have a chance to make bad throws. Yeah. I can't get the breakdown on it because I don't have time to subscribe to the Kansas City Star.
Right.
And then forget to unsubscribe. So, I'm not really overly concerned about that part of it, other than just, hey, the Chiefs have more experience playing in cold weather than the Texans do. So maybe it's a factor in the game, but I don't think it's a huge one to worry about.
Do you think the layoff with the Chiefs is a bigger factor in this game than the weather is for the Texans?
I think that's a good point. Yeah, I would lean into that. I would lean into that more so than the cold weather.
Yeah, that was my question. So I think those are both things that are material. I think they impact the game. Now, the thing about being offered 24 days means you're inherently the better football team. There is that.
You know what, though? Honestly, part of it, too, is, though, it's, hey, the Texans are a domed football team.
Yeah.
They're the classic warm weather team or dome team going off in the playoffs to play in a cold weather environment.
Yeah.
And it typically doesn't go great for those teams.
No.
The old one forever, remember a warm weather team had never won a Super Bowl or whatever.
Tampa couldn't win a game for decades that was below 35 degrees. Remember that? Like they had to be at home.
What was that? It wasn't that a warm weather team hadn't won a Super Bowl, but there was some without home field advantage or whatever it was. There's a it plays out.
It definitely does. Yeah.
It's a factor, but these aren't awful winter conditions. These aren't like a Buffalo Green Bay type of one of those classic cold weather games.
Dude, it could be way worse. When they were playing that when Texans were playing on Saturday, and you can look ahead to the, you know, the 10-day forecast, and like it's a stark difference, man, between what the weather's going to be like Saturday afternoon and Sunday. And I'm going, man, I was praying for a Saturday game. Like it's like a 12 or 13 degree difference. And 12 or 13 degrees when you're talking about being in the 30s and the teens, that's a big, you know, it's like not all 5 yards are created equal in a football game. Like, you know, you get a 5 yard penalty on first and 10, that's first and 15. 5 yard penalty on second and 1, now all of a sudden you got to throw instead of run. Like 13 degrees when it's like, is it 90 or is it 77 outside? Like, that's a difference. 13 degrees when is it 31 or is it 18? Like, 18 degrees. High of 18 degrees. I mean, I guess they all matter, but Payne and Pendergast with you on a Thursday. We got Football Friday tomorrow. There may be a Pope Zaza appearance tomorrow. Is Pope Zaza ready to come out tomorrow, do you think?
No, I still haven't decided on my Pope hat.
Okay.
So, no. Yeah, that might have to be a 2025 season thing.
Okay. I still want to exercise some demons tomorrow somehow.
Yeah, we can do that. We'll do that. But we'll do it as
Payne and Pendergast. Bishop Zaza. Yeah. Okay, got it. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Up next, Matt Burke talks about the D-line room. This room sounds fun. I don't know what I'd pay in an auction to hang out with this D-line, but it would be a lot. We grade the nicknames. Rod Wright has nicknamed all of the defensive linemen. How did they do in nicknaming these fellas? We'll talk about that coming up next.
From the Mokarum Injury Lawyer Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Hi, Payne and Pendergast with you. Here is Matt Burke, defensive coordinator, yesterday talking about the spirit, the ethos of the defensive line room.
You know, the D-line, they have more meeting time separate, like, because a lot of times the back end is getting together and doing stuff. So they have more meeting time together, and they have more individual time together, right? Because we're doing group installs, we're doing pass stuff. So it's hard sometimes to coach and to keep the energy level up and to keep the interest up, especially where we are a front that's sort of like, this is our techniques, and we kind of like do the same things. We want to be really good at what we do. So to coach, for those two guys to coach that style, like, and to keep the energy as high as it is and as it's been all year, like it's week whatever we're going on, and like literally this morning's meeting, like I walked down the hallway, I'm like, good Lord, man, it's like it's wild in there. So I feel like it starts with the energy and keeping those guys engaged and keeping it fresh week in and week out. Like those guys have done a really good job, and Rod's really led that room to a good spot.
Like what he talks about, there's kind of a lot of monotony with the defensive line sometimes because they don't have as much stuff to install or worry about, you know, but at the same time, you want to be sure guys aren't getting bored. So you got to figure out ways to keep them engaged. And it sounds like Rod Wright has done a really good job of that. I think it helps having as many veterans as they do in the room, but also there's a lot of evidence of good coaching on the field, given the way that the defensive tackles, I think, some of them have done way more and made more plays than they typically do or have with other teams. He's done a good job with that defensive line. It's easy to say, like, well, yeah, sure, they got Danielle Hunter and Will Anderson and Denico Autry, and it's more than that. Like, Tim Settle getting 5 sacks this year.
Oh, yeah.
Mario Edwards having the game he did the other day. A lot of that just comes down to, A, just good coaching individually, but then I think they've rushed as a group pretty well. Their big challenge this week is that versus the Chiefs, they did a good job rushing, like winning their individual matchups, but they didn't get Mahomes on the ground. And some of that just comes back to the linebackers also, that, man, sometimes Mahomes is going to pull the ball down, and then he is not afraid to just he's not trying to scramble to the outside and find some space. He hits it right up the middle.
Yeah.
And that puts the linebackers in a bind, because they got to real quick make the decision about, all right, do I abandon my coverage responsibilities? Because that guy's running towards the line of scrimmage right now. And it's really tough. So that's on the defensive line, obviously, but also just everybody else and rallying to tackle Pat Mahomes when he does decide to run.
The interior of the defensive line feels like the one position group that a lot of Texan fans before the season were wringing their hands over the handling of that, trading Malik Collins for a seventh-round pick, letting Sheldon Rankins walk. You bring in some guys that are kind of no-name journeymen. Fans aren't familiar with them. You don't draft anybody at that position.
Yeah,
it feels like that was a position group that there was a lot of hand-wringing going on, that now people who are wringing their hands haven't really kind of looked around and said, okay, maybe we were wrong about that. Well, I'm not saying they're a great group or anything like that, but I think as collectively, they've played better than what the expectations were among the fan base.
There,
for sure.
No, in terms of run defense, too, I think that there's a couple things. One is that, like, for whatever reason, PFF, the way they do their grading system, Pro Football Focus, they tend to penalize defensive linemen who are in schemes like this where the guys just rush up field really aggressively, because a lot of times when you do that, you're going to get washed and it'll look on paper like it's a bad down, but it's kind of within the style of the defense. Mm-hmm. So people look at those PFF scores and they think, oh, these guys must be playing like garbage. Then you look up at the end of the year and the Texans were the second best team in the league in terms of yards per rushing attempt.
Yes.
They were like, they shut down the run a lot. And they get a lot of tackles for loss. There are times, and in games like Green Bay, some of the power running teams or teams that can kind of maul you physically, they've been able to have success versus the Texans' run defense. But on the sum total of it all, they've been playing really good run defense.
Yeah.
We've seen this now for a couple of years. Man, D'Amico really seems to get the most out of journeyman type defensive tackles,
no doubt.
And, you know, and Sheldon Rankins goes off and gets a much better contract than he had been offered the year before when he signed a 1-year deal with the Texans.
Yep.
So I think that we're going to start to feel good about D'Amico's ability to do with defensive linemen that maybe what the Astros are able to do with pitchers, just get the best out of that position.
Yeah, car wash. So Jonathan Alexander has a piece on the D-line, and he talks about how Rod Wright, the defensive line coach, who was promoted in the offseason, he was the assistant D-line coach last year, so now he's in charge of that group. So he's been around these guys for a couple of years now. They were looking for ways to motivate players, and he thought about, hey, how about giving them all nicknames? And then the thought of these behind the nickname is that hopefully the player would take on the character personas, right?
Mm-hmm.
So here are the nicknames of the Texans defensive lineman. Tell me, Seth, if you were to be in this room, if you would like getting these nicknames here. Foley Fatakasi, number 91, wearing your old number, is Big Dog. Big Dog.
That's a good nickname. Yeah.
Big Dog.
He's a big dog.
He is.
You know what, though? He's sleeker than I thought he was. When I first saw him in person, I was like, oh, that's a big dude, but he's put together pretty well.
Yeah.
Like, he's not a big, fat slob of a dude whatsoever.
Danielle Hunter, Cyborg.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one. That's a playoff of Terminator. Will Anderson was a Terminator.
And he is in this room, too. He's the Terminator.
Okay, yeah, so you know what? I like that because it's good. It goes with Terminator.
Yeah.
But it also is, that's kind of what he looks like, almost like he's not human. Like he's a comic book character, yep, or something. Yeah, that's a good one.
D'Amico Autry is the Junkyard Dog.
Yeah, that's perfect.
Yeah.
I don't get it. I get a check minus for originality.
Yeah.
Maybe on the Big Dog one, too. But, yeah, that's definitely his personality and his character.
I kind of like Nick Caserio, his other nickname. Nick called him a junkyard dog and a bad MF-er.
That's right.
And a guy you want in a dark alley with you. That's kind of long to be a nickname. So Junkyard Dog, we'll go with that.
I don't want a junkyard dog in an alley with me because typically I think of a junkyard dog as one that's not trained all that well.
They do not discriminate.
Outside of his own environment. Like he's good in the junkyard. But he's in the alley with me. And he attacks the guy whom I might be fighting, but then he runs out of the alley and attacks 10 normal citizens on the street.
Exactly, yeah. Flesh is flesh. Yeah, exactly.
So I would say a socialized junkyard dog.
For D'Amico Autry.
Yes.
Okay. Derek Barnett, Deadshot.
Oh.
It's a super it's a superhero played by Will Smith, and he kind of looks like him, I guess.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So yeah, I didn't know that either. Don't
What are Deadshot's skills or superpowers?
I don't know what his superpower is. Text in, let us know.
He's a very good marksman, it turns out.
Okay.
That seems like kind of a weak.
Yeah. I would think that you would want a superhero who's really good at scooping up oblong objects and running them into end zones with people dragging all over
him. Deadshot is in excellent physical condition from intense workouts. He's very strong, able to punch through cement, and he's very durable, able to withstand brutal beatings. Okay I like that.
Okay. Mario Edwards is Wild Dog because of his personality.
Oh.
Yeah.
I don't. Mario Edwards never struck me as that type of a personality.
I don't know, man. He gets pretty amped after he slams people to the ground. He had that celebration after his sack on Saturday where he's pushing his head this way and pushing his lower body that way. And
yeah.
He was pretty. It didn't look like a wild dog. It just looked like a human being who was very excited. He did something that's going to get him paid eventually. The nickname starts to tail off a little bit the further you get down the depth chart.
Yeah, like he was just did Rod Wright let AI do these nicknames?
He might have.
He took care of some of the more bigger name guys,
you wouldn't guess Tim Settle's nickname in a million years. Skinny Timmy.
No,
that's worse than the big intellectual. That's the skinny
Timmy.
Skinny Timmy.
I don't like that.
Yeah. It feels like one of those nicknames that's ironic, you know, like calling, kind of like, you know, calling a
tiny,
calling a big, huge guy tiny or calling a little weasel Bubba or something like that.
Yeah.
92, Dylan Horton is D. Horton.
Oh, it's just phoning it in at this point. Wow.
Did y'all get tired?
Wow.
Can you imagine being Dylan Horton? This guy survived cancer, and he gets D. Horton as his nickname? What are we doing? He survived
stage four.
Yes.
To come back and play football.
As D.
And to
Horton.
Honor you, we give you the nickname, your initial. Yes.
Oh, my God. The last two, Jerry Hughes. Okay, Jerry Hughes is Unk. Because he's the elder statesman.
Yeah, he's
the elder statesman in there. And I'm a little disappointed that they didn't go with my nickname for Kirk Heinisch, which is Big Heine.
I've never been a fan of that one.
I know you don't like that one. What do you like better, Big Heine or Mr. Reliable?
Oh, God.
Okay, what's worse, Mr. Reliable or the Big Intellectual?
Mr. Reliable sounds like the classic, hey, this is why the white guy is in the D-line room.
Yeah.
He's always where he's supposed to be, and he's just, you know what? He might not be the best athlete, but gosh darn it, he plays his responsibility.
Yeah.
Good for you,
yeah.
Little mascot, and then they tussle your hair. Yeah.
I
take offense as a white guy on that one.
Mr. Reliable. Mr. Reliable, right. It feels racist. Heinisch said, quote, it makes you feel unique, it makes you feel good, it gasses you up a little bit, end quote. Okay, he's lying right there. Kurt Heinisch is lying. He was inactive last week. He's probably kind of hanging on, like, fringe of the roster right now. So he's not going to make any fuss over his horrible nickname that they gave him, Mr. Reliable. He's just going to be like, this is really badass, man. Yeah.
Also, you can't fight a nickname.
You can't, right. Yeah. Usually the black defensive linemen are usually the best at defending the honor of the white defensive linemen.
Yeah.
Like they'll point out, because there have been times where I was in meeting rooms where, like, I remember one time with Gary Moeller, I made a really nice play in a game, and Gary Moeller is like, look at this guy here. He's not a very good athlete, and he's just but boy, look at this. He just grinds it out.
Yeah.
And all the other defensive linemen are looking at me, and they're like, no, Seth, like, that was a hell of a play. Like, I don't know what the hell he's talking about.
Had you added Go Die to your repertoire yet at that point, or was that something that came later? Because that feels like at least a private – in
Moeller
your head.
Was too old for me to have said that to Moeller at that point. Yeah. I'm not going to say go die to an elderly
what's
guy.
What's the maximum age that you would tell somebody to go die?
I don't know. Some of that's, it depends on just
health.
Like it could be a 29-year-old junkie. I'm not going to tell them.
Floating target. Right. Yeah. How close are they to death? Not really what's their age. Yeah.
Right.
Gotcha. All right. So we know now. And then what did you say, Reggie? You can't run from your nickname?
No, you can't fight a nickname.
Can't fight it.
Especially if I mean, if you fight a nickname, I think the other people are inclined to lean in for harder.
Use it more, yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's if you fight a nickname, it's you're basically sealing your fate.
Yes, yeah. They'll try to get under your skin that way.
That's that's one of the diciest situations you can find yourself in as a young man when you get a nickname that you really don't want. Because you're right, Reggie. You can't tell anybody you hate it, but you can't do anything to it's a tough one. It's a tough one.
Did you
best thing to do is prevention. Don't get put in that position.
Correct. Yeah. Did you ever have a nickname, Reggie?
I did, which funny enough, organically Lopez came up with the same name.
Oh really?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
The professor?
When I was young. And of course, I was talking about this with Clint a few days ago when we were handing off. Right? Like it's also akin to when people are like, oh, you're so mature for your age.
Yeah.
Like when you're a young man and they're like, you're so mature, you're the professor. Indirectly, what they're saying is like you're not cool.
Yeah,
like,
you're kind
lame.
Of a dork.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's too bad. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's fine.
Yeah,
I was called Cliffy in high school.
Huh?
Because oh. I know so many stupid facts.
Cliff Flavin.
Like, yes.
Oh, I can see that. Yeah.
I know. Yeah. That was tough. I wasn't super enthused about it, but yeah. I was like, okay, no, because Cliff Clavin would just make stuff up. I was like, it was pretty harmless, you know.
There's
like,
a little known fact.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the best was when, for those who don't know, the younger audience, Cliff Clavin was a mailman who was a character on Cheers who sat at the bar and just spewed sometimes actual facts, sometimes made up facts. The best was when he was on Jeopardy.
Yeah,
and it was and the grand prize question was like it was like the names of three people.
Yeah.
And Cliff's answer was, who are three people who've never been in my kitchen? And it, that,
technically
that was,
correct.
Yes. That's what he was fighting. And he's like, yeah. Well, Alex, I mean, technically, these are three people who've never been in my kitchen before.
I was the Whopper.
I was going to say, I feel like you probably back in the day.
A lot of J-Lo's back in the day.
Had one of those nicknames.
Even before Jennifer Lopez.
You were the big something.
I was the Whopper.
The Whopper.
Okay. Why was the Whopper?
Well,
I don't want to hear about locker room stories.
I'd like to tell you the lie that I created in high school.
Did that have to do with the actual Whopper, Billy Paul?
Yeah, I was pretty good in basketball, and I had a hook shot with both my right and my left hand.
Like
that
Billy
was my
Paltz.
That was my, and it was Billy Paul's back in the day, and they called him the Whopper, so they called me the Whopper.
Yeah, yeah.
The Whopper Jr., maybe?
That's not what I told the girls, though.
Whopper Jr.
You guys... You want to hear one of my nicknames that was like one of the ones that I just, it was inaccurate, but I was totally cool with it. So this is before I had ever actually, you know, gone all the way with anybody. I was a virgin. Somehow there was
is that
this
how
rumor,
that works?
There was this rumor around floating around the high school that not only did I have an incredibly high body count, but that I was incredible. Like, and that the girls were calling me the marathon man. And I have, to this day, I have no idea how or why that rumor got started.
Just some benevolent girl.
Further from the truth. Like, I was a virgin, but like, there were girls that were like, I don't know if I'll go out with Seth because he's been with so many women. And I'm like, it's like, all right, I guess. Sure. Call me that. So I don't know. Somebody out there was like either just playing really weird head games with me to keep me to themselves,
mm-hmm.
or I don't know.
Was it American Pie where Finch? Actually,
oh yeah.
Finch paid Jessica mm-hmm. to go walking around telling all the girls.
And then he
how
just started.
Yeah,
then he yeah, just started yeah. to slay.
Yeah. Then he wound up with Stifler's mom.
Yeah. Yeah.
I wish I were smart enough to have done that.
Yeah.
That's a great tactic.
It was completely false.
That's a great.
This incredible humble brag by Seth. I love that.
Yeah.
It's not a humble brag. It's me. I had zero to do with it. I was a virgin. I hadn't done a damn thing.
If anything, it sounds like it prevented you from getting laid.
Well, you know, it did. Well, yeah. And then think of this. I've got this reputation of this guy being whatever, but look,
we set the bar high.
Like,
huh?
your first several to 2,900 times.
Sure.
it's not a marathon.
No, you would have been exposed quick. Real quick, text message. Someone sat there saying "Skinny Timmy" for Tim Settle sounds like a shower nickname. All right.
Oh man,
we will give way here to In the Loop. Hey, Bex is coming up here with food, so be hungry.
You're damn right they
Bex
are.
Bex Prime is coming up here and. I have a confession
Hey,
12:20 today.
You are in
on Lunchtime Confessions. Yeah, so, yeah. So
I like the notion of just like you popping in various segments, offering a little bit of, you know, just like one sentence and then popping out. Like if you could do that for me, I would greatly appreciate
it. I'll think about it. That's good. All right. You're listening to KLT AM, KLT FM HD2 Houston and Odyssey Sports Station. Seth, antibodies to you. I'll see you tomorrow.
Antibodies from the marathon.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh yeah.
Oh hell yeah. All right, we're out of time except for Seth. He's got all the time in the world because he's the marathon man.
Don't have time for nothing else.